And in this probation revocation case, we're asking this court to reverse the family court's revocation of Joseph's probation. We're asking this court to do so because Joseph's violations were excusable. The family court's application of the law and its decision to the contrary was wrong. And it was wrong in large part because of its violations of Joseph's right in terms of double jeopardy and due process protections. And in that, Joseph was punished twice for his drug use while on probation, once during his modification at the beginning of November 2009, and a second time again in the revocation. That's before the court now. There's also a due process violation, I believe, in that there was no notice given with regard to his punishment, the second revocation. In the revocation hearing, there was no allegation with regard to his drug use, and so there was no notice given for that. Alternatively, if this court holds that there was no due process or double jeopardy violation, we're asking this court to remand it for a further hearing in that the family court abused its discretion in not granting continuance for a doctor to be present and testify. Now, the facts of this case are not lengthy. In fact, from my reading, they're not really disputed facts. And the transcript is relatively short. There are 52 pages in the transcript in total. And it shows that Joseph had a long undocumented history of mental health problems. Unfortunately, he also has a long documented history of drug abuse. He was on probation from January 30, 2009 through his first modification, November 2nd, 2009. He had five hospitalizations due to his mental health. He was on a number of psychotropic medications. I believe none of this is disputed. And very importantly is that while he was incarcerated during his first modification, while he was in the care and custody of the state, he was not given any medication for his mental health, and that precipitated or it helped him decompensate, or as the Intermediate Court of Appeal, the ICA says, his psychotic disorder. And I believe the family court in its findings and its holdings does not dispute that. On page 47 of the transcript, the family court states that Joseph destabilized after using drugs. On page 52, the family court states that after Joseph used drugs, he basically lost it. And I believe even the state, twice in its answering brief and once in its opposition to our petition for certiorari, quotes the family court that Joseph had destabilized after using drugs. So I believe there's no dispute in terms of the facts.
Mr. Ting, isn't the question of whether or not a continuance should be granted a matter of discretion for the court?
Well, the standard is an abuse of discretion, and it's our position that the court, in this case, the family court, did abuse its discretion. And under the four Lee, State versus Lee factors, we believe that Joseph did qualify, his case did qualify for a continuance in this case.
And the four factors. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
I was going to ask you to address the four factors, but apparently you're going to.
Yes, thank you, Joseph. The first factor, just in order, the first factor is due diligence. And while conceivably, the trial attorney in this case did tell the court that she had not subpoenaed a doctor from the state hospital. That includes specifically the doctor is Joe Fukumoto, and that's the doctor who is in the record asking for at the state hospital, asking for a second fitness evaluation after the hospital had deemed Joseph to be fit. Again, conceivably, the
perceiving that the doctor was not subpoenaed, wouldn't this be more appropriate for maybe, to, and in order to develop the record, maybe a Rule 40 that could be filed later? I understand you don't want to talk about
it. I think I'm not in a position to go there, but I think the court's correct. You're correct. I think in terms of a remedy along those, I mean, there's a possible remedy along those lines in a different form.
Will Lee even apply in this case? Does Lee even apply in this case?
It's unclear. In terms
what's unclear?
In terms of the ICA, I mean, if you're referring to the ICA's decision,
you know, you've just conceded that Rule 40 is a possibility in this case, so why are you even here? If Rule 40 is a possibility.
Well, certainly a possibility, but I think we also have a remedy that I think we, even despite the fact that the docket was not subpoenaed, I believe it complied with the due diligence of the practice of normal practices before the circuit courts in the state. And as I was saying.
Was Lee a revocation hearing proceeding?
I do not know the answer to that.
Did Lee involve any constitutional issues? Was credibility an issue here as it was in Lee?
Well, I think so. In such that if Joseph testified, he certainly testified to his own decompensation, and the doctor would have been able.
Well, was there any questioning of whether or not he decompensated? He admitted to the violations, right?
That's correct. The violations themselves. I think there's a question as to his ability at that time in November of 2009 to have been able to comply.
Which one of the witnesses at the revocation proceeding challenged the credibility of the petitioner?
Well, I think it's not just his credibility, but as well as to be able to support the defense's contention.
Well, then let me ask you this. In Lee, was there a challenge to the credibility of the witness?
Mr. Ting, if I could just ask you to move the mic over. We do make recordings of these arguments for the record, and you're kind of leaned away from it. Thank you.
Sorry to interrupt. Yes. So in this case, was there a challenge to the credibility of the petition?
Well, I think based on the court's findings, based on what the court decided, the court didn't believe that that Joseph could not comply. That even though, despite that he used his did the best he could in terms of complying, that his abilities, his decompensation, contributed to him not being able to be successful. And so, even though perhaps it didn't rise to sort of a mental.
Let me ask you this more directly then. Was there any opposing witness who challenged the credibility of the petitioner?
I don't believe the only other witness at the hearing was the probation officer. I believe in terms of the probation officer's testimony, it was consistent with his testimony that he was acting strangely, he was acting abnormally. However, it would still have been important to have additional and doctor to testify. That not only was he acting strangely, but he was acting, that his mental capacity was at a state that he could not comply, or certainly contributed to him not being able to comply despite his best efforts at that time. And so, again, with regard to the due diligence leg of Lee, you know, oftentimes, I know in the practice in the First Circuit, for example, when there's a application for a 704 fitness, on the first return of that, there being set for a hearing, there are no doctors subpoena. And that is just a practice before the First Circuit. At that time, when attorneys are present with the three letters from the it is at that time that the court sets a hearing.
This is Second Circuit, right?
It is the Second Circuit, and I do practice in the First Circuit. I think in the Second Circuit, it's even more. I think that the concerns are even more so with regard to expense of bringing doctors to court, and the convenience and scheduling for the doctors, as well as the scheduling of the courts itself.
Would it have been possible for the doctor to just testify via telephone?
I think that was suggested by the defense counsel that they could set up a video conference.
That's different. Video conference is different from telephone.
I don't know. Well, I can't answer that question in the sense that I don't know what the capabilities of or the resources of the court.
The commitment proceedings are now done by video, right? Is that done by video on Second Circuit too?
I don't know about right now. I know in the First Circuit, very recently, and literally in the last few months, a lot of the...
That might not have been happening back in 2009, at least in the
correct.
Second Circuit.
That is correct. And so the normal practice is to not have the doctor present, but to arrange a common time when everybody's going to be available. And
well, the doctor here was on Oahu.
The doctor was at the state hospital on Oahu.
And the hearing was on Maui.
That is correct.
And this issue about the need for the doctor came out partially because, I guess, the court prevented the probation officer from indicating what she thought decompensation meant.
That's correct. It arises in part because of that, because, as you stated, Justice Jacoba, that the probation officer wasn't allowed to testify as to that. And so that cut off. And even the court's own inquiry with regard to that is that it was the court opined, and the court said it was a medical, it's a medical definition, it's a technical definition, medical definition. And so during the hearing, and I think it was argued on brief that the issue arose in the middle of the hearing, and in fact, perhaps partially excused the fact that the doctor wasn't there at that time and was needed based on what arose at the hearing. Now,
did the court give any reasons for denying the motion to continue?
I don't recall there being any reasons.
I thought you argued in the briefs that the court didn't give any reasons.
My recollection of the transcript is that the court...
No, I'm asking you, didn't in the briefs you folks say that the court didn't give any reasons for the continuance?
I don't think there was a reason. I would agree that I don't believe there was a reason given. I don't recall specifically the brief saying that, but that is the case. All the court said was we're gonna finish the hearing today. And I believe that was the only stated reasons within the transcript from the court that the court wanted to complete the hearing today, that day. And I really think that really shows that the court, it's an indication that the court, and I'm getting ahead of myself, that the court did in fact punish Joseph for his drug use twice. It's an indication that the court was, for whatever reason.
The second motion did not allege drug use as a reason for moving.
No.
It was based on failure to report, those kinds of things, failure to go to the sex offender treatment program.
No, it
yet
did not.
The state's brief seems to be arguing that he voluntarily. The state's brief seems to be based on drug abuse again. And the court seems to have based its decision on voluntarily taking drugs again.
I think that's absolutely correct, that's what the court did. It wasn't alleged, as you say, Justice McKenna, and I think that raises a notice problem, and as well as because in fact, when the court's stating its findings, when the court's stating its sentencing, the reasons for sentencing, it does in fact say that to the effect that Joseph is being punished for using drugs.
But isn't that a reaction to the proffered explanation? In other words, it's undisputed. He didn't show up at Aloha House. He didn't, I think, show up as required at his sex offender treatment, and he didn't show up to see his probation officer, all of which are violations. I think, would you agree that those things were conditions of his probation?
That's correct. And, okay. and I believe the trial counsel before the family court conceded as well that those were violations.
So the explanation is that was due to his mental illness, and his explanation of how it came out that his mental illness was triggered was through his drug use. Now, is that at some point in there, is there not sort of a break? An extent or a place at which the defendant can be held accountable for his additional actions in addition to the drug use? Or does he, in essence, he kind of, as long as he relies on his mental illness, he's basically going to be able to violate in any way, and that's not going to be a problem? What would your position be on that? I'm trying to understand the principle of where you think things went wrong in this case.
I get the sense that the court, Chief Justice, that you're worried that the defendant may have a blank check, that you know once he uses drugs and he's been modified, he's been punished for that, that now he has a blank check to blame everything on his mental illness. And I don't think that's the case. But to answer your question first, I think once he had been modified, once that he had been punished for using his drugs, which he was at the beginning of November 2009. That cuts off the rationale for punishing him again. I don't think it gives him a blank check to violate however he wants. Certainly, if he commits another crime, I mean that's.
But didn't the probation officer, didn't Aloha House, they set up a further appointment for him to come in to be seen at Aloha House, correct?
Correct. That's not disputed, and it's not disputed that he didn't make that appointment, as well as I believe he failed to go to his sex offender treatment. At least a couple of meetings he had to reschedule and didn't make. And so, again, the violations themselves, they're not disputed. Our position is that they were excusable given Joseph's mental conditions at the time.
How he addressed it was because the defendants testified to taking the drugs, and that made him feel, the meth made him feel like he didn't need to take his mental health drugs, and that's why he decompensated. I think that's what, isn't that what the defendant himself said?
Yes.
So in that respect, he's explaining why he didn't willfully fail to comply with the terms and conditions of probation. It started with the drug use that made him stop taking his mental health drugs. But the judge said that was a voluntary drug use that evolved into this failure to comply with terms and conditions. So, and he doesn't accept the voluntary ingestion of drugs as an excuse.
Well, I really think that I don't think the family court itself explained it quite so clearly. The voluntary intoxication point wasn't, I don't believe that was, well, implicitly it was, that's what they were talking about, but I don't think it was expressly made until the answering brief of the state on appeal. I submit to the court that that's really a red herring in this case, what it really points out is that the court was punishing Joseph twice based on his self-induced intoxication. He had been modified and he's being revoked. So based on that one act or one conduct, he is being punished twice in this case.
But I'm not sure about the punished twice argument, but the facts apparently were that the first motion for modification of probation was filed because the petitioner admitted to his probation officer that he had used methamphetamine.
That is correct. In fact, that was the sole basis for the modification.
Okay. And then the court sentenced the defendant to 8 days in jail.
Correct.
And during those 8 days, Joseph didn't have any access to his mental health medication or his medication.
That is correct.
And he indicated that even prior to that, he had been decompensating. In other words, he had been hearing voices, couldn't remember things, and he, as he described it, everything was scattered.
That's correct.
And so the violations, so apparently he claims he didn't take any methamphetamine from the time of his imprisonment up until, the time he was placed in Hawaii State Hospital.
That's correct.
And apparently during that time he had no medication either?
You're correct. There's no evidence that after Joseph was released from custody in November of 2009 that he took methamphetamine or any other illegal.
So from the time he was put in jail up through the time he was put in Hawaii State Hospital for being unfit to proceed, he took, apparently had no medication and took no methamphetamine. Is that correct?
I believe the record shows that to be correct.
And it was during this time that he committed the acts for which he was charged in the second motion for modification and revocation of probation.
That is correct.
So your theory is his acts were excusable because they were not willful and deliberate in the sense that he just didn't have a handle on what was happening.
Well, that's exactly our position.
And there was no testimony specifically, especially expert testimony, on that issue.
That's correct, and I think that's what the trial counsel was trying to get.
Was there any evidence that he took meth after he was released from custody in November of 2009?
There's no evidence in the record.
Then why is the state arguing that he intentionally took drugs? That's what I'm very confused about.
Well,
that wasn't the basis for the motion, right?
To answer your question, and you're asking two questions, and I have the same confusion, and that's why I labeled that as a red herring, in that there was no methamphetamine or illegal drug use.
In any event, he was in custody from December of 2009, and then he was transferred to the state hospital in March of 2010?
That is correct.
During that whole time, he has no medication?
It's my understanding that...
When was he found unfit?
I believe when he was transferred in March of 2010, they remain in custody and they remain in jail until they're found unfit, and then at that point they're transferred to the Department of Health.
Okay. So in terms of a motion for revocation of probation, where, you know, there's a suggestion that a defendant maybe have some issues with respect to ability to conform, to comply. What standard do you think that this court should apply? Is it the same as the penal responsibility under 704-400? Is that the standard we should apply?
I'm not sure I understand your question. Are you asking what standard for the revocation?
In terms of penal responsibility, if this was the original charge, he couldn't have been found criminally responsible if he lacks substantial capacity either to appreciate the wrongfulness of his conduct or to conform his conduct to the requirements of the law. Is that what we're applying? Or I think the statute says inexcusably fail.
I understand your question now. I don't think the 704 standard is what we're applying here.
Okay.
There was no argument. I believe there was no argument and there was no evidence presented with regard to penal responsibility under Chapter 704 in this case. And so I believe that the trial counsel was...
The fitness letter, when did he... It just said he's unfit as of the time they wrote the letter. Is that right?
Well, he's found unfit by the court.
But the letter, there must have been a letter. Was it a one panel or a three panel?
It's a felony. So
okay.
There's a three panel, so there are three letters.
Okay.
And there are three letters for the court's consideration in March of 2010 when the court found him to be unfit.
Mr. Ting, can I go back to the Aloha House and what happened as after he came out of jail? And the question, there was a question during the course of the hearing about him not taking medications. And his explanation at one point was, my prescription ran out. My Aloha House case manager, Darcy Henderson, was helping me to get refills. But between my schedule at school and work and my appointments, we just never really were able to get together and get my prescription refilled. Is that a valid excuse or reason not to have gone back and gotten the medications that would have kept him or enabled him to comply?
What's a little ambiguous about that, and it doesn't come through, is that Joseph did try to get the medication. In fact, he did go to the pharmacy himself, and at that pharmacy called his caseworker. But the caseworker, for whatever reason, wasn't able to come down, or he didn't have a current prescription. And so Joseph did do the best he could to refill his prescription. And so, perhaps inarticulately, he says, because of scheduling and whatnot. But Joseph did in fact go to the pharmacy. And try to get help from his caseworker in terms of refilling his prescription.
That's the incident that's described here. Is that in his? That's not in the record, is it?
Admittedly, that's not described there, and it is not in the record. That's before this court.
Mr. Ting, didn't the judge actually ask Mr. Villarreal, well, so you stopped taking medication, and is that why you started using drugs? And he said, no, it was the other way around. I started using drugs and then felt the medication was no longer important.
Yes, and that is typically the case for people who are dual diagnosis.
So doesn't that even make it more of a voluntary act on his part? If he voluntarily took drugs and then it was the drugs first, and then because I started using the drugs, the medication was no longer.
Well, I think what's unexplored here is that there is a possibility that there's a pathological intoxication in this case, because at that time Joseph didn't understand the connection between his drug use and his mental health problems, and that's reflected in Dr. Altman's second letter to the court in terms of finding him fit. That Joseph in Dr. Altman's letter says that now he understands the connection, and so there perhaps was. Which wasn't raised or discussed below, was perhaps a pathological intoxication problem for Joseph, and that he didn't understand the connection.
Was he starting the start of taking the meth and stopping medication? Was that related to the first motion for modification of probation?
I'm not sure. The first modification was clearly specifically based on him taking methamphetamine. And by that time, and it's reflected in the probation officer's testimony that even by that time, he was acting strangely. He was acting strangely, and he wasn't himself. And so there's evidence in the record already that he's starting to decompensate even by the first modification. And so... not sure how much time I have left. We are asking this court to reverse the family court's decision, finding that Joseph has inexcusably violated his probation. Because I believe the family court punished him twice for his drug use. Alternatively, we're asking this court to remand the case for a further hearing that. Testify as to his mental condition and his ability to comply. Thank you,
Mr. Ting. Mr. Boxa. Was that the end of Mr. Ting's time?
It was.
You know, we were asking you questions during the time you'd reserve, so I'll allow you some time for rebuttal after Mr. Boxa speaks. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chief Justice Rakhtanwal, may it please the court. I will go directly into the first issue raised by petitioner, the double jeopardy issue. The double jeopardy issue was not raised in the opening brief. It was raised in the reply brief. They contended that this respondent took the position that he was being punished for the first modification of probation. That took first for which a petition was filed on October 30, 2009. And also punished for the second revocation petition, which actually was a revocation at the second time. The first time was just modification of probation. According to the record, the petition for modification made by the probation officer was filed on October 30, 2009, based simply on the ground that he used illicit drugs. This first modification was heard on November 2nd, 2009. The circuit court judge, the appellate, in the presence of his lawyer, admitted simply the allegation. There was no allegation of psychotic disorder at that time. Then the motion for revocation was filed on December 7, 2009. This motion for revocation was based specifically on three grounds: failure to report to his probation officer, failure to follow through the double occurring treatment, and failure to follow his sexual treatment program given by the court. Specifically, the circuit court, in ruling on the motion for revocation, mentioned specifically these three grounds, and the circuit court said that he inexcusably violated the terms and conditions of probation. The circuit court made that decision after hearing the testimony of the petit of the appellee himself. I wish to restate to the court here that he was not being punished for the October 30 petition. He was being sentenced here for revocation under what was filed on December 7, 2009.
Mr. Boxer, one of the things that really concerns me when you said he's being sentenced, the defense counsel asks for a continuance in the middle, and then it's denied. And then right before, after all the evidence is finished, the defense attorney says to the court,
Justice Pollack, can I make a confession? I am hard at hearing at this point.
I am sorry. It's my responsibility. There was a report, this is the defense attorney, this is after all the evidence has been concluded, the defense attorney asked the judge, she asked for continuance, and she says, there was a report from the state hospital, from his treatment team, that suggested a plan for him when he was released from state hospital to come back to Maui. I'm wondering if the court got that. And the court says, I don't have it in front of me. And then the defense attorney says it was addressed to the court, and it's dated July. And then the prosecutor says, Your Honor, to the issue of violating, this is not relevant. I think you're right. And then the defense attorney says, I'm just asking if the court, and then the court says, you have further evidence or witnesses. And then the court goes on and finds him in violation and proceeds to sentence him without that report. And our statutes require a court to have all the relevant information in front of it. 706 says the court has to consider educational or vocational training, medical care, all these things that the court had to have in front of it. And the court says, the court proceeds without it.
Well, Your Honor, you are correct. I remember very well that interchange between the defense counsel and the court, and the defense counsel, the court said, I do not have that with me right now.
Is it in the record?
I do not know, because there's no indication in the proceedings itself whether in fact the court had the record that came out from the State Department, from the State Health Department.
Is it in the record? That report? You know, in the motion for reconsideration, the defense counsel again alludes to that treatment plan. And the witness who would have done it is the same doctor that she was trying to get the court to bring in.
Your Honor, the pre-sentence report is a part of the record, but I really don't know, because pre-sentence report is a matter of confidentiality.
This wasn't a pre-sentence report here. This was a motion for revocation of probation. The judge just went ahead and sentenced him.
Honestly, Your Honor, I don't know whether in fact the court had that. But I just want to continue my argument here on the double jeopardy. The appellee contends that he was not responsible for this because of the condition in he was in. I would like to refer the court to the actual transcript on September 30, 2009, on page 34 of the actual transcript itself, where the appellee said, and he was talking about non-fulfillment of the conditions of the revocation, of the second revocation, that he said that he did not have the cell phone. He used the cell phone as his planner, but then he accidentally left his cell phone in Hana. And then, right after that, defense counsel asked him, and this were the specific questions asked by defense counsel, do you think that you did not follow through with your probation because you did not have your cell phone or because you had a mental illness? Response, aye, just because I wasn't organized. I didn't have anything set. I mean, I did not have what I had that set me. Organization was not there anymore. And then later on at the page, at the end of the page, counsel again asked, and you understand that part of your mental illness, that describing it as self-induced because you use drugs and it caused you then to become thus. And the answer was, yeah, that's what causes the voices. From smoking methamphetamine, I got voices and delusional thinking, and my thoughts were never like that before. You know, I started thinking higher, like I was higher than normal. You know, hearing voices like things that weren't really there. So he in fact admitted that he was using the methamphetamine.
But earlier, didn't he testify that after October 2009, he detoxed on his own at his house? I mean, what point in time is it clear that he's talking about using again after he was released from prison? Or I thought he was in Aloha House in April or May of 2009 because of some major psychotic incident dealing based on substance, drug use at that time.
Apparently, he was in Aloha House And there is testimony to the effect that in October, he was still taking medication. In fact, I think the Chief Justice, I don't know if the, it was the paragraph that was referred to by the Chief Justice, but at Aloha House, he said that he was assisted by Dr. Rando. He was taking Seroquel and, well, but
that was earlier in the year, right?
That was earlier. That
right.
was earlier.
The he, spring.
He testified, but when he was asked the question, when he was taking medication, he was not taking medication after that.
After he was released from prison, he wasn't taking medication. He was detoxing at the house.
Yeah, he was not taking medication, but then he elected to use drugs, methamphetamine.
When?
After that.
Are you saying that that testimony is clear, that he was admitting to using methamphetamine after his release from prison? Because it seems like earlier he testified, I was detoxing at my house after I was released from prison.
My reading of the transcript is the inference that because he had used the illicit drugs, medication was not a factor anymore. So my interpretation of the record is that because medication was not a factor anymore, he had to use drugs. And in the citation that I just cited to the court, they were talking about the violation of probation for the second time, not for the first time. And he was talking about...
you know, whatever the reason was that he may have decompensated, isn't the real issue of whether or not his failure to comply was excusable or inexcusable based on mental illness?
Your Honor, we do not know the reason why. He testified that he decompensated, but that is all he says. But
right, and he wanted to have a doctor testify as to what his condition may have been back in November after his release, right?
You're referring to Dr. Fukamoto?
Yes.
Dr. Fukamoto treated him at the hospital. The record says that Dr. Fukamoto was his attending physician from April 6th, 2010.
Couldn't she offer testimony based on her familiarity with him that she gained after he came to Hawaii State Hospital about what his condition was, the type of mental illness he was suffering from, whether, for example, you know, the lack of medications could trigger those symptoms and how quickly they might trigger those symptoms, which would bolster his argument that it was because he was no longer taking medication that he then developed this mental illness, or the mental illness reasserted itself, and that's why he couldn't comply. Couldn't that doctor offer testimony relevant to that issue?
There was no medical testimony as to that, but the defendant himself, even when he was asked by the court asked him, when you were on probation, were you on medication? Yes. And you elected to take the illegal drugs? Yes.
Is that the end? Is that the only thing the court needs to hear?
I think that, are you referring, there's no testimony to that?
So if he elects to take illegal drugs and he completely decompensates and he has no idea what's going on, that is an inexcusable failure to comply with conditions of probation, no matter what, because you elected to take drugs.
But I thought my reading of the transcript was that because he took the methamphetamine, he had this psychotic disorder. The psychotic disorder was a result of his taking of the methamphetamine.
He had a pre-existing psychotic disorder, which he was being treated for at Aloha House, and in fact it resulted in 5 hospitalizations, according to his testimony, after he had gone on probation. So 5 inpatient hospitalizations plus out treatment at Aloha House, under control on medication. His testimony is he took meth. Because of taking meth, he then felt like he no longer needed to take his medications to keep his disease under control. I guess the question is, he was punished once for having taken drugs. Is it unfair then, assuming that because once he'd taken the drugs and it affected his treatment for his mental health, that he could no longer control himself? And is it then fair to punish him for what he did afterwards? What's your response to that?
You are saying that he was being punished for taking...
He got punished once already for the 8 days. Now, according to his testimony, has an untreated psychiatric condition that makes it extraordinarily difficult for him to comply with these kinds of conditions of probation. Is it fair to punish him again in those circumstances?
My reply to that, Your Honor, is this. For the modification on November 2nd, based on his admission of taking the illegal drugs, he was punished for that. The second one was for the revocation of probation based on the three that were enumerated by the probation officer. And it was this that the circuit could just punish him. In fact, if you read the
page... All right, let's say drugs have nothing to do with this, okay? Let's just say that this person had a pre-existing schizophrenia where he hears voices. And it's actually quite common for schizophrenic people to go off their meds or because they think they're fine. So what if he just thought he was fine and he just went off his meds because he thought he was fine, and then he failed to comply, he failed to report? Are you saying that that is inexcusable, failure to comply with the conditions of probation?
Your Honor, let me go to the testimony on that. He said that...
I'm not asking you what he said. I'm just saying, what if that fact scenario... What if it's just a schizophrenic person that on probation that goes off his meds and then he can't remember his appointments and he can't show up to where he's supposed to and he's hearing voices? Is that an inexcusable failure to comply with a condition of probation?
I still think that the condition he was in was a result of his taking the methamphetamine.
Okay, Mr.
Please
Boxer.
Answer my question. Is that an inexcusable? It doesn't matter. I'm just saying, whatever the cause of his decompensation was, if somebody's hearing voices is psychotic and doesn't go to appointments, is that an inexcusable failure to comply with the condition of probation? I'm not saying that that's what happened here, but I'm just asking you that hypothetical.
Yeah, I'm trying to answer that, Your Honor, but let me go back to the decompensation.
Before you do,
the transcript into that stage, he said that he was not able to take his medication because he had all these things going on: scheduling of work, scheduling of school, scheduling of a medical appointment.
Is that exactly how he said it?
Yeah, and then he decompensated.
Okay, Mr. Boxer.
Mr. Boxer, Justice Pollack had a question.
I have a question because I think it directly goes to this, because it seems to me basically your reply is this is all, the mental decompensation is all based upon the fact that he took crystal methamphetamine. I want to read to you real briefly two sentences. This is from Dr. Altman in his letter. It's mentioned in both Dr. Altman's letter in July of 2010 and Dr. Compton's letter, and this is when he's in the state hospital. And what the doctors tried to do, because they were giving him so much medication, they reduced the amount of medication to him. And this is what the doctor says. He even showed an indication of good judgment when he recently asked his doctor to consider increasing the dosage of his medication when he himself felt concerned regarding symptoms increasing. Having patients request an increase in dosage is an uncommon event for patients in the hospital. So he was decompensating in the state hospital when they just reduced his medication. So to say that it all relates to crystal methamphetamine use or other factors, I think is not supported by the record.
You are saying that he was decompensated at the state hospital?
Dr. Compton said that he felt his symptoms began to increase when they decreased the level of the medication they were giving him in the hospital, and he asked on his own to increase the medication, which they did.
I just want to get the bearing of the court. Is it the bearing of the court here that there is that he was not able to comply with the terms of probation because of what is indicated to me?
Mr. Boxa, I'm asking a question. I'm not speaking to the court.
Your Honor, I apologize, but I still maintain that the reason he was not able to comply with the terms and conditions of his probation was because he took methamphetamine. The methamphetamine caused all this psychotic disorder, which made him unable to comply.
So you are now admitting that he was unable to comply because of his psychotic disorder?
Yes, but...
Okay, so is that... Now we're dealing with a statute, all right, that says that you revoke probation if a defendant inexcusably fails to comply. So you're saying that as long as drug use triggered the psychosis, it doesn't matter. It's not inexcusable. In other words, he has no excuse.
This. And this is my own.
Okay. Your own?
No, I mean my reading of the inability to comply with the thing. The cases that were cited by the Intermediate Court of Appeals in saying that he inexcusably violated the terms and conditions of probation were cited therein. You know, like, you don't have to be in your full mental capacity to do that. And, you know, the voluntary intoxication is not a defense.
Voluntary intoxication not being a defense to penal responsibility. Are you saying that that also applies to probation conditions?
Because the criteria that we are using in the standard is the willful violation.
Isn't that to deal with penal responsibility?
Yeah.
For the actual commission of the crime, does it apply to 706.625, which says you don't that a revocation of probation is for an inexcusable failure to comply?
We believe that those cases apply as well here because when we say inexcusable, I mean, it's willful, it's intentional. And with all the other reasons that he is also telling about.
But in the second revocation motion, the revocation motion, not the modification, he wasn't charged or he wasn't, the basis of the motion was not that he took drugs. The basis of the motion was that he didn't report, he didn't he didn't go to sex offender. So those were the bases, right? Not that he took drugs.
Yeah. Your Honor, let me finally answer that question. The court, when the court finally sentenced him, he said, you have many reasons. The court gave you many reasons, consideration. He noted twice. He was referring to the first one when he was originally sentenced, and he was referring to the second one when he was sentenced for the modification. I reminded you then. What I'm telling the court is that the judge told him, I reminded you not to take drugs. You know, and he did it on his own.
So if he took drugs once and it triggered a psychotic episode and then he was, you know, he was penalized for taking the drugs, but because he took drugs once, then whatever he did subsequently, even though he was psychotic, it can, you don't, it's okay. You can just revoke probation. That's where I'm really having difficulty understanding. I don't understand what inexcusable means under the statute now.
Well, is it your position there were things that he could have done but didn't do to address this condition?
Beg your honor?
Are there things that he could have done but didn't do to address his mental health condition that factor into the analysis? Is it your position that there were things that were within his power to do or not to address the situation?
I don't think I understand the question.
Well, we're talking about whether he had his actions were excusable or not. And I guess the question is, if his actions were completely the product of mental illness over which he had no ability to control or to address, then that's one thing. If it's there are things that he could have done, people were trying to work with him, they were trying to get him treatment, but for whatever reason he chose not to avail himself of that treatment, that might be a different situation. What's the situation here?
Your Honor, I would say that under the circumstances here, wherein even as he says that he was decompensated, you know, I mean, he's saying, I missed the appointments because I didn't make my doctor because so-and-so, and then my kids, my mom came, I forgot it totally. I called the probation officer, told them to comply in the next week, and then by the next week, you know, I was totally out again. I would say that under these conditions, you know, the fact finder, the trial judge, is the sole judge of the credibility of the witnesses, assessment of the,
I'm not sure there was any I'm not sure there was any credibility issue. Nobody's testimony was in conflict with one another.
In some way, there is, Your Honor, the conflict of testimony here, because, you know, he also testified that as soon as he got out from court during the first modification, he said he did not take drugs anymore. And then later on, he was even questioned by the judge. And because he said, you know, I decided not to take medication. I decided to take drugs, so medication was not that important anymore.
Mr. Boxer, under the statute, the defendant has a right to present witnesses and to oppose the motion for revocation.
That is correct. Yeah.
And so we recognize, at least under the Constitution, the right to present a defense.
That is correct.
So whether you agree with the merits of it, would the presentation of Dr. Fukumoto's opinion be part of presenting a defense in terms of an explanation of why the petitioner was acting in this way or in the way he did in terms of violating the terms of probation?
Your Honor, I have to say that that is a basic consideration. And I strongly believe that as well. However, under the facts of this case, and under the requirements of the State versus Lee, I cannot see how the motion for continuance would have been granted in this case.
State versus Lee was a little bit different, though, right? It was a trial. Yeah. The court said, oh, all these witnesses are waiting. We'd scheduled this trial before, and now you're asking for another continuance. Nobody raised, and the court never considered any assertions of a constitutional issue, as the petitioner does here, like the right to present a defense. And I think the court indeed just said, the ICA just said, well, it's just a matter of credibility, so it apparently not as weighty in terms of overriding the court's decision to reject the continuance.
I have to agree that the Constitution is very important, very important. Complying with the Constitution is very important. But the trial judge also has to be governed by rules, by decisions, by itself or by the higher court. And there is that decision by the appellate court.
But did the judge give?
Has to be complied with.
But the judge give any reasons for denying it?
Your Honor, unfortunately here, the reason for the denial was not stated.
Could that mean that there wasn't a valid reason? Could that be a possibility? Except the judge wanted to get it done today?
But I thought there is also an obligation on the part of the party to articulate to the court the grounds and the reasons why. And the court, the standard for the court is abuse of discretion. And honestly, Your Honors, I cannot imagine how I can honestly argue to a court that in this case there was an abuse of discretion when no particular reasons were stated to be, no subpoena was issued to the doctor. There is the defense attorney even told the court, I have not subpoenaed the doctor. He did not give the reasons why the doctor should be testifying. There is no indication of what favorable testimony would be and whether that doctor would be willing to testify.
If the doctor is subpoenaed, she would have to testify, right?
The doctor, if subpoenaed, Your Honor, he has to. And I want to respond to the allegation here that there is a practice in the circuit court or practice anywhere that should be made a part of the record. It is important for the court in its operation that things to be decided upon by the court should be made a part of the record.
Mr. Boxer, do you wish to wrap up at this time? You have a couple moments or minutes to wrap up your argument, and then we'll hear.
Done.
All right. Any further questions from the court? Thank you. Mr. Ting, you can have a couple minutes to rebut if you'd like. Okay, very well then. Thank you very much to both of our attorneys. The court will take this matter under advisement.